Gurave Gaurachandraya Radhikaya Tadaliya Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. So, pranam to all of you, good morning. And we are continuing today with our series on Radical Personalism, beginning with not a new section, but somehow there are different sections in the series. So our first four meetings have been connected. Some have been acted somehow as an introduction to other topics that we would like to present and unfold. And in that sense, we are continuing or starting today with that section, but all of that tied and with the idea of radical personalism and all its implications. So today we are in our fifth meeting. We will be speaking today about vulnerability and empowerment. And the subtitle will be Staying Strong by Embracing Our Weakness, as counterintuitive as that may sound. But as usual, let's make some brief recap of what we saw last class, last Tuesday, in our fourth meeting, Reasons to Remain or Leave as a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So we started by sharing some news regarding a new book project in connection to the topic of this series. And then we connected that with the introduction to that book that is being written, or has been written, in which I included a list of reasons to leave or to stay as a Gaudiya Vaishnava by reading other book, which gave that inspiration, that idea. And of course, these reasons were not invoked to inject doubt in people, but just whether we stay or leave, do it for the right reasons. And especially, of course, we are pointing in this connection to the staying. And so in one sense, the question or the list was not so much about leaving, but loving, as we always say, and leaving, not leaving, but how to stay. Okay, we decide to stay, but how to stay in a deep way so we can belong deeply, deeper. And in part, this list and the series itself, could we say, is also connected to those who decide to stay for the wrong reasons. Because again, we can decide to stay, but for the wrong reasons or the right reason, and it's not either black and white. No, I mean, we may be staying for the right reasons on a 60% and 40% for the wrong reasons. So it's not that we are pointing to the wrong stayers and the right stayers, if you will. It's all in us to begin with. And even if you want to say, no, I'm staying for the right reasons 100%, potentially we can be some of those who will eventually start to stay by the wrong reasons and compromise our ideals and integrity. So we shared a list and we went through that in our previous class, how to stay for the right reasons. First of all, I started with the 10 no's, if you will, why not to stay as a Gaudiya, which again is in the context of more that why not to stay and let's leave this place as soon as possible. It's mostly about acknowledging things that are not correct, but which actually do not belong to the essence of the tradition, but which is being expressed in the name of the tradition. Of course, I unpacked the list in detail. I will unpack in the forthcoming book. And in the class we did it on some degree. I will just now mention the points. I won't enter into the details. So in the list of no's, we mentioned lack of human sensitivity and lack of psychic balance, cognitive rigidity, lack of substantial dialogue, different shades of fundamentalism, and lack of appreciation for other forms of knowledge, whether mystical traditions or non-secular disciplines, various forms of abuse, elitism, discrimination, chauvinism, excessive nostalgia for the achievements of the past and inability to deal with present-day challenges, excessive emphasis on proselytism, and so on. So again, these no's do not belong to the swarup of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, no, are not about what Gaudiya Vaishnavism is about, and even do not belong to in mature practitioners in our traditions, but could be connected very easily with dysfunctional humanity as a whole, if you will. You will find that in so many directions. And again, starting at home, probably. So we are not pointing with this as some sections of Gaudiya Vaishnavism specifically, or condemning the whole Gaudiya Sampradaya as indulging in this absolutely. Because again, the very essence of the Sampradaya remains totally beyond and untouched by all these human dysfunctionalities, if you will. So those were the 10 no's, and of course, again, we unpacked them on some level in the class. I won't do it here in the recap. And then came the 10 yes, why to stay as a Gaudiya. So we, of course, began saying that, well, one of the main reasons to stay as a Gaudiya is because all the 10 no's actually do not belong to the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. They are not what Gaudiya Vaishnavism is about. So but it's important to invoke them because sometimes they come in the name of that. So we need to separate the two. And other reasons were the deep theological depth of the tradition, the living saints in past and present and future for sure, the possibility of relating to Bhagavan in his form as Srinam, a very unique philosophy and therefore very unique lifestyle promoted by that philosophy, different sacred spots and kindred spirits that we can take shelter in, the life and legacy of Mahaprabhu, all that implies this ocean of Gaur Tattva, and so on. Again, I mentioned just 10 quickly, but there are so many other things that we can add in both lists. So that was basically the last week's class. And we concluded again, just to make it clear, it's not about loving, it's not about leaving, but it's about loving Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So even in considering and invoking these no's, are there to give our yes more ground and more maturity and more sobriety, if you will, and rethink at the same time those things that are coming in the name of Gaudiya Vaishnavism but do not belong to it. Again, always starting in us. So rethinking about those things that may require revival. We shared that homework for those who would like to do it, to make your own list of no's and yes and reflect upon that. So what we can do, again, with personal commitment. So that was a brief idea of what we saw last week. So in connection to today's class, there are some threads and theme that connects one class with the other. So the point is, how will we rethink, how we will think and open ourselves to those things that require adjustment, revival in our tradition? Well, vulnerability. That's the answer. Open ourselves, acknowledge our wounds, as we already spoke, allow ourselves to be healed by our wounds, and that will result in empowerment or a descent of a wave of grace that is the one required for creating whatever miracle may be required at each particular stage. So that's the connection to today's class, fifth class, vulnerability and empowerment. So let's share some introduction to today's class. As you may imagine, I'm receiving lots of feedback from this series, in every possible direction, not unidirectional, not monochromatic, but multi-nuanced, if you will. So one of them suggested that, and of course I'm trying to take that as seriously as I can and hopefully be nourished and benefited from all those directions. So one of them suggested that, in one sense, that no matter what we try to do when we speak, not only in this series, but in our lives and our attempts as a devotees, there will be always problems and dysfunctionalities in the Sampradaya and in any tradition, because there will be always devotees in different stages of progress. So there will be different levels, different adhikars, so it's normal to expect some of these things from the no list, if you will, in certain sections, always. And of course, I agree. Of course, the attempt of this series is not to force everyone into being an Uttam Adhikari and there are no kanistas left or something like that, and all of us will be like transferred to a super high, you know, idyllic, over-idealized situation. It's not happening. So I'm not expecting, in other words, to see like some form of absolute transfiguration of the Sampradaya, of every single member in our Sampradaya, because yes, there will always be deviation, misrepresentation, misreading, abuse, I mean, to be realistic. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that, okay, since that will be always there, then we shouldn't do anything, we shouldn't say anything, we should just allow everything to happen because we are in Kali Yuga, so those things will happen. We kind of over-normalize, if you will, something. Well, we could be able to do something for that not to be as a disaster of, it has the potential to be, if you will. So yeah, there will be abuse, there will be deviation, but again, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't speak and name each of those abuses and deviations. That's what our acharyas have done in the past. Now we should actually recognize and all those patterns. Now, not pointing again to a particular group. Now, they are the enemies of the Sampradaya, the whatever, the tumor in the Sampradaya's body. But recognizing and dealing with those patterns wherever they manifest. Starting at home again. But sometimes there will be some other homes as well, some other houses outside on the front. So we have to be identified and committed to whatever these patterns that do not belong to the Sampradaya, but that play out in the name of the Sampradaya, whatever they manifest, I commit myself as a member of the Sampradaya to work on them, whether it's at home, whether it's with my good brother, good sister, my mom, my dog, anyone. We are committed to truth, basically. So we can know what needs to be changed at the particular time we're in, because if not, we run the danger of becoming complacent and or even cynical. Like, well, everything is a mess and everything will get worse in time, so let's not do anything about it. And sometimes, despite that these patterns will come forever, if you will, deviation, abuse. Also, we can see that there are some deviations or abuse and the principle of abuse and deviation will take a particular shape in a particular time. And that needs to be addressed according to the form it takes in that time, according in a language relatable to that. So in that sense, it's not the same deviation as the past. As we always say, we can have problems and deviation with social media nowadays. That was not a problem a few decades ago. So we need to address that in the particular shape that's happening, or some other forms of abuse or deviation. As we already spoke, we hope that our particular generational trauma that is not yet resolved is not passed to the next generation in the name of parampara or anything, so they can be better equipped to deal with their own generational trauma by us passing on them our resolved generational trauma. And not just saying, well, this will be happening forever, so no need to do anything. So that's basically the spirit behind this. This project, if you will, not so much like changing the world or making everything absolutely pure forever, because, yeah, that's not reality, but again, not to the other extreme of utter passivity, if you will. No? Passivity, you say? So again, in order to... Okay, so if you acknowledge, yeah, there are some things in our present moment that need to be addressed, starting at home. In order to acknowledge anything, I have to open myself to that. So in order to open myself, in order for us to hear and to admit what needs to be changed today, again, we need to take a particular stance, and that's what we call vulnerability. We will, of course, explain more today about that. But vulnerability will take us to a position where we open ourselves to acknowledge whatever needs to be acknowledged, as embarrassing as it may be. But interestingly, the result of that vulnerability, if properly expressed, will be empowerment. So you are exposing your embarrassment in an empowering way. Again, that may sound counterintuitive, But that's how life operates. And so that's today's title, Vulnerability and Empowerment. Again, staying strong by embracing our weakness. So it sounds counterintuitive, I agree, but we'll try to unpack these implications today. So they make perfect sense to us. That's the idea. No? Even as counterintuitive as something may be or sound, it can make perfect sense to us. We may need some further unpacking. So there are many reasons why I feel the need to speak about this, of course, because of the importance of the topic, and also because of sometimes these are not things that are being talked too much among members of our school, at least not in certain language that I feel may be more make all the things more relatable. For example, it comes to mind another feedback received recently from a devotee, a second generation devotee who now may be in his early 30s or something. And we were talking with him about vulnerability and trauma and empathy and all these type of concepts. And he told me, Maharaj, the first time I heard those words for the first time was like 3 years ago. Now he's like 30. And not from the lips of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Like implying, I was never introduced into that world. And now that I feel that I need so much to relate to those terms, and they are nourishing so much. So these are important words. Again, they are words that sometimes we need to incorporate in our Gaudiya lingo, lexicon. Because maybe we never heard them, that doesn't mean that they are bad because they do not belong to the Sanskrit glossary or something like that. Or like one devotee was telling me that Sanskrit, of course, is a very unique language and all terms are incorporated there, yes. But of course, we also need to express the ideas inherent in that language in ways that are relatable for us where we are. And not necessarily everyone is a Sanskrit expert, if you will. So sometimes we need to update some of the concepts, how we speak about the same things that we will speak forever according to every time and age. Language is there. And still we are speaking about something that is rooted in our tradition. As we already spoke, for example, a few lectures ago, to give a few examples, the idea of anartha nibriti, we could also term anartha nibriti as shadow work, because it's totally connected to dealing with your shadow, to dealing with your hidden self, and so many other things connected to the notion of anartha nibriti. Or instead of material conditioning, you can use the term trauma, which can also be naturally tied. And it can be more relatable because sometimes we end up repeating certain expressions for decades, and at some point they lose absolute meaning for us. It's just a word that we know when to invoke it, but we lose the capacity to go deep into the implications of that word. And if someone says trauma, it's like, oh, and it opens another portal, but actually it's the same thing as the other thing, but you were not able to enter through those words. So some other words may open a portal that other words may not open, while still speaking about the same thing. So we have, again, shadow work and anartha nibriti, material conditioning, trauma. We can speak about humility, but another way of speaking about humility could be vulnerability. They are not different things, as we will be seeing. And again, it may add some nuance to the idea of, to a stiff idea of humility that we may have for time immemorial in our mind. This is humility, because this is the danger. We speak about humility, surrender, or whatever. We may have very preconceived notions of what they mean and how they should express at any given moment. And it's a very narrow-minded and limited idea that goes against the very notion of those words. Humility, surrender, and so on. So again, I'm just giving a few examples. My point is probably of many of these new quote-unquote words speak to us more clearly about the essence of the old, quote-unquote, terms. But we are still loyal to our tradition. We are not here departing from any essence or so on. So although this devotee that I was talking to never heard words like vulnerability from the lips of another Vaishnava throughout his whole life, ironically, Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about vulnerability. That's interesting. That's the irony of it all. No? We may never have used this for ever, if you will, but this is all about it. So let's try to unpack this idea a little bit more. No? How Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about vulnerability. It's all about embracing this virtue, about being vulnerable. So I remember actually I'm talking today about vulnerability and empowerment, but this is a combination of terms that is not the first time I've used. I once written an article on that, and I once gave a lecture on that maybe 2 years ago. Maybe it was a Japa, online Japa retreat. I don't know what it was, but I was here actually, I remember, in the room downstairs. And it was COVID, not COVID-19. Remember those glorious times 2 years ago? Confinement and so on. So it was pretty much in connection because those were very vulnerable times where the whole world was very fragile and very much aware, okay, everything can die at any moment and everyone, and confinement made you aware of how all your limitations. So it was very unsettling, very uncomfortable, but also very revealing if you took advantage of that. No? So I remember we spoke about how during those times of COVID, and it's not that we have transcended that now, humanity was faced by force of circumstance, if you will, with its own vulnerability in a very like, in a way that was unthinkable before, because it was just like from one day to another, everyone was faced with that, and that it was so, again, unsettling for most, almost all-pervading vulnerability, everyone thinking about that, speaking about that, aware of that, and it was a totally unexpected situation. I was totally embarrassing for most, because again, most people was faced with their own fears, with their own doubts, with their own limitations, a situation in which you had to admit by force your frailty, uncertainty, smallness, all the things that for the ego are like poison. So again, is that a problem? Not necessarily. It's an opportunity to grow. So that's the blessing of vulnerability, although we will see most of us may not like that word and its implications, but again, we have to rethink, recalculate, and embrace it from the proper place. So Gaudiya Vaishnavism, going back to the point, Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about vulnerability. Again, all the things that I've talked in this series and all the things that we will continue to share after this particular lecture throughout the whole series till the end, as we may have seen, revolved around the present condition of the Gaudiya Sampradaya and its members. Again, not specifically one member, one group, not specifically the whole Sampradaya, but in general, what's the contemporary situation in different sections, especially starting from our heart. And again, one of the main problems of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, I will say, is that we don't understand who we are as Gaudiyas, basically, what we are about as Gaudiyas. Remember, I'm mentioning Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about vulnerability. So if you don't recognize that, you do not acknowledge who you are as a Gaudiya, what's your own tradition. So the more you don't know what's Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the more you will misrepresent your own tradition to your own self, to begin with, what to speak of the world. Now you will be misrepresenting yourself as a Gaudiya to yourself, and you will be, of course, experiencing the shortcomings of that after that, after such misrepresentation of not knowing what's Gaudiya Vaishnavism while externally representing it. And again, what's Gaudiya Vaishnavism? Of course, we could say so many things about it, but from today's particular perspective, Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about vulnerability. You cannot separate the two. But somehow many of us, Gaudiyas, have developed some aversion to the idea of vulnerability, of expressing that quality in ourselves, of allowing the tradition to be vulnerable. So what do you mean by Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about vulnerability? Well, Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about divine love. That's our goal, and that's the all-in-all, if you will, a very unique form of love. And love, as we already spoke, moves in a crooked way. Hari Bhagati Premnasra Bhava Kuti Labhavit, like a snake in zigzag. So that love moves in a crooked way means love is unpredictable. That's the quality of the movements of love. Unpredictability. Snake-like unpredictability. Which means out of control. If I cannot predict something, I don't know. It's totally out of control. It's uncertain. It will be unexpected. And all those are synonyms for vulnerability. Vulnerability has to do with embracing that, with acknowledging something is out of my control, entering in the land of uncertainty, embracing unexpectedness. So that's how love moves. And Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about love. And so try, please, to connect the dots. Because that's the tradition you belong to. You want another example? We have the very deity of our sampradaya, Sriman Mahaprabhu. He's a vulnerable god, I can tell you. The most of all, the most vulnerable faces of the divine. He's the ultimate embodiment of both vulnerability and empowerment. Don't lose sight of these two. One, the connection of one, cause and effect, if you will. Because why? How? Well, vulnerability, among many other definitions, can be defined as we already mentioned, uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. That's how you know you are vulnerable, or you can become aware of your vulnerability: uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Of course, we will explain how those things happen at every moment, although we may be aware of that once in a year. So if that's vulnerability, that's totally connected to the Gaurlila project. Uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. We know what gave rise to Gaur avatar, to the manifestation of Gaurlila. It's not a beginning in time. I won't enter into the details of that. But basically, Krishna wants to explore in depth the heart of Sri Radha. And he himself taste Radha Bhav and experience himself through the lens of her own love. So that's totally connected to this point. Uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. I mean, it's uncertain. For Krishna, it's, I want to experience the heart of Radha. I don't know what's that. So it's uncertain. He's opening himself to uncertainty. What will be that about? I don't know, but I will. I want to know. So emotional exposure. Oh yeah, he's exposing himself. He's exposing his own emotions, his own curiosity, his own attraction, his own neediness in connection to that experience. But on top of that, he's exposing himself to Radha's emotions to overcome him. So emotional exposure. Krishna exposed to Radha's bhava. And then risk. What will happen by Krishna tasting that? It's a risky project. You never know what will happen, how he will end. That's why we say Radha herself embraced him and covered him with her halo, because she knew he will be on the floor, and what will happen, this will be like totally, again, risky, unexpected. So all these qualities that make for vulnerability, uncertainty, risk, emotional exposure, are all there in the Gaur avatar, in Sriman Mahaprabhu. Krishna experiencing deep need, divine dissatisfaction. No, it's not enough to be Krishna, if you will. He wants to become a little bit more, if you will. So in that sense, he becomes the most vulnerable face of the Absolute, the most needy face of the Absolute, the most fragile, because of that acknowledging his need. But interestingly, as we know, Mahaprabhu is known as the golden volcano of divine love. So he's the most volcanic face of the Absolute simultaneously. So he's the most vulnerable, and he's the most empowered, volcanic. So there we see the relationship between vulnerability and empowerment, the very deity of our sampradaya. For example, when Mahaprabhu was in Gambira in his last years, he was in his most vulnerable moment, crying and sobbing and suffering in separation in such a like a delicate moment. But that was, he was the most nourished by Swarup Damodar Ramananda Roy, most empowered when he was the most vulnerable, and so on. So in this sense, we see how this Gaur Lila is teaching us a very valuable lesson regarding to this point. That's the most valuable lesson, that our most empowered prospect lies in the land of vulnerability. It's very important to have that clear. Our most empowered prospect lies in the land of vulnerability. That's where you have to go if you, in order to be properly empowered. And that's our open secret as Gaudiyas. That's the God we worship. And that's what Gaur Lila is about. And we are part of Gaur Lila, just in case. We belong to that play, if you will. We have been invited by grace. So Gaur Lila, our deity, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, is all about vulnerability and empowerment. Every time I say vulnerability, don't forget the word empowerment coming as a result. Still another example. You want more? Okay. Still struggling with the idea of vulnerability and Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And let's continue showing how our tradition is all about vulnerability. Bhaktivinoda Thakur famously wanting to pass away in Kurukshetra because that had to do with Sri Radha. You know, the story meeting Krishna in the solar eclipse. She was in her moment of greatest necessity in front of Krishna, but not being able to join him, greatest vulnerability for her. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur fully identifying with her vulnerability and making her vulnerability his vulnerability. Identification with vulnerability. That's love also. Love, as we will see, is the most... When you love is when you are the most vulnerable, basically. So that will create, of course, again, as Srila Samaraj will say, the more you identify with the need of service, the more remuneration that will invoke. It's another way of saying, the more you identify with vulnerability, the most empowerment will come. Well, which will be the remuneration, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj? Prem. And what's prem? Greater energy to offer in service. That's how he defined prem once. You, that will be your reward. That will be the empowerment. You will be showered, if you will, with a deeper capacity or deeper, greater energy to offer in service. So again, we are all about that. This universal pattern of vulnerability, of course, giving birth to empowerment, is not only a feature of of our own tradition. It's not limited to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but yes, of course, in our tradition, that's pretty clear. Some other examples that come to mind, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita itself, which is not a text limited to Gaudiyas, if you will, but is central as well for us. So the beginning, the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, as we already spoke, first chapter, the Yoga of Dejection, Visada Yoga, which is another way of saying the Yoga of Vulnerability. No, helplessness. Arjuna being thrown on the ground, crying. His Gandiva bow was like thrown who knows where. Totally vulnerable. In the midst of the fratricidal war. So the worst possible scenario, he's totally vulnerable. But he's acknowledging that in a way that the result of that is Bhagavad Gita. The highest good, the highest knowledge, the message of love comes. Empowerment as a result of vulnerability. And the Srimad Bhagavatam the same. How it begins, Parikshit Maharaj being cursed to die in a week. And that's pretty vulnerable. I mean, death is thrown on top of you. Like everyone, that's what makes people most vulnerable here, death. And Parikshit Maharaj is vulnerable by receiving that, but he's embracing death in a way that his embrace gives rise to the appearance of Sukadev Goswami and the speaking of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Empowerment, again, but starting with vulnerability. And of course, in the height of Srimad Bhagavatam, the gopis are leaving everything behind. Again, risk, uncertainty, parakya bhav, no? Entering into the unknown. Krishna playing the flute and they don't know what will happen, but they just cannot but run before. They're taking all risk, all uncertainty. They don't know if they will meet Krishna or not, but the result of that is empowerment. No? They develop the highest love for Krishna and can offer that to him. So again, we see how everyone in our tradition, this pattern of vulnerability, empowerment, is there. And remember, we are Gaudiya, so we are to embrace that in our particular situation regarding the present condition of our Sampradaya, whatever. But even we can find that in other places, in other traditions. For example, in Christianity, of course, the greatest symbol of this is the crucifixion itself. You know, the crucifixion of Jesus is at the same time the worst possible thing in human history for Christians, but the best possible thing at the same time. Simultaneously. It's like his archetypal death is existing like an example of his how to accept finitude, betrayal, tyranny, but heroically, in a heroic way. So he's totally vulnerable, naked and embarrassed and crucified, but at the same time, that holds him sign of empowerment. Or even beyond religious traditions, in contemporary times, if we will, like we can think of a very topmost dreadful occurrence like Auschwitz and World War, and that could be deemed as the worst of the worst, if you will, done to humanity. But in one sense, you can say that gave rise to the best of the best in humanity, in the sense of, I don't know, someone like Viktor Frankl writing Man in Search of Meaning, as a result of that extreme vulnerability, extreme exposure to risk, uncertainty, and so on. But properly embraced, giving rise to a big list of Holocaust heroes, if you will. To give examples, again, the list is unending, actually. I'm just sharing a few examples for us to understand how this actually is a pattern of reality. It's not only about us Gaudiyas, but we are part of reality, if you will, so it's all about this in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So in this way, our tradition, again, the pattern of life itself is all about vulnerability. And empowerment, of course, but it all begins with vulnerability. And in one sense, vulnerability could be seen as a feminine virtue, if you will. And ironically, many sections of our tradition, although Gaudiya Vaishnavism is very Shakti-oriented, it also has that feminine side. Many sections of our tradition do not reflect this healthy vulnerability, but many cases reflect the toxic masculinity, male-oriented, if you will, in a very excessive way, again, abusive way, distorted way, to the point of preventing any form of vulnerability to show up. And if you prevent any form of vulnerability to show up, you prevent any form of empowerment to show up. And we need empowerment. We need a particular descent of grace, and we accepting that for invoking certain changes that we may need to see. But it all begins with vulnerability. So if through toxic masculinity you don't want anything to do with vulnerability, immediately that prevents real empowerment to happen as well. So why I say toxic masculinity, for example, for a man, the greatest shame for a man generally, at least, is to be seen as weak, to acknowledge his own weakness or fear or whatever. So toxic masculinity implies this superficial sense of external sense of strength and a denial to acknowledge weakness. That's not healthy masculinity. That's not integrated masculinity. That's evasive one. So if in our tradition, or in us, again, as individuals and as its members, if we are affected by this form of toxic masculinity, a false sense of strength, which is actual weakness, but unwillingness to acknowledge that, then we will be deprived, we will be disempowered due to our inability to embrace sacred vulnerability, due to our fear to do that. So let's further analyze vulnerability so we can stop being afraid of it. That's the idea. I'm not saying that's easy, and so many layers are there, but we should proceed accordingly. So we can realize the actual virtues of vulnerability, and also so we can realize our need to embrace the continual presence of vulnerability. So again, some words regarding how we go this are all about vulnerability. In principle, Gaudiya Vaishnavism has all to do with that. So please, so we don't feel all these words and talks as totally unrelated to who we are, to the essence of our tradition. So let's go to the next section where we'll speak about, we'll try to dispel also some misunderstandings in connection to vulnerability. And one of them will be that we actually, we cannot be vulnerable, but we are vulnerable by nature. It's not like, okay, I will practice vulnerability now. No, you are in a vulnerable condition by who you are. So it's not that you need to be. No, you are personified vulnerability. And I'm not insulting you. No, don't feel bad because of that. That's not downplaying your ontological situation. So again, when defining vulnerability, as with any terms as usual, we will be usually also dispelling false notions of it. No, what vulnerability is and what is not. We need the two approaches generally. So while doing so, I will be referring to a specialist in this area called Brené Brown. Some of you may know her. Her work is quite recommended in this connection. She works a lot with vulnerability and guilt and shame, all the things that we don't want to go to because we feel guilt and shame. Because speaking about that, so, but we need, again, we need to expose ourselves to those types of narratives and see what happens as a result. So she mentions this point to begin with. Now, the one important thing to understand is that we don't do vulnerability, that we are vulnerable at every moment. And again, that's not bad. If properly acknowledged and expressed, that's empowering. Don't lose sight of that. But it's not something that you choose to do. So there's no choice in this connection. The only choice you have, the actual option, is to do to acknowledge your vulnerability or continue your life as if it doesn't exist, but still it's there. I mean, you are vulnerable whether you acknowledge it or not. Those are the options, actually. The options are not, I am vulnerable or I can be not vulnerable. No, the options are, do I acknowledge that or not? So we don't engage in vulnerability. Again, we are vulnerable. We are vulnerability. So the only choice is to acknowledge it or not. Of course, unfortunately, sometimes we conclude that vulnerability is not a virtue. Again, it's weakness and it's something to be avoided. But maybe you realize, I cannot avoid it. I cannot like make that out of my system. So in many cases, we end up becoming expert in hiding that. And masking vulnerability because of guilt and shame, who knows why. Even we can end up using the spirituality as a perfect armor, if you will, so we don't have to properly express vulnerability. And of course, that's not spirituality. That's spiritual bypassing, as we already spoke. You are like weaponizing spirituality, you know, utilitarianism. You know? Like you're taking that to serve your limited purpose. But ideally, we should be happily acknowledging vulnerability, because that's part of us. So we should be happy to acknowledge who we are, happily. That's self-esteem. No? Real self-esteem means to acknowledge who you actually are, happily. So real self-esteem means to acknowledge your nature, which means to be vulnerable in a healthy way. That's one way of putting that, of course. And that's self-esteem, again, real self-esteem, which I think is a very big topic, and we need to work on that in a healthy way. Real self-esteem has not to do with being self-centered, being egoic, arrogant, or thinking that, whatever, no? I'm perfect and have all virtues and people telling you, I love you, I love you, I love you, all day long, an overdose of kijais. That's not self-esteem. But real self-esteem, realistic self-esteem, means you have to recognize who you are and your own worthiness for who you are, in essence, but not from an isolated position or not from an over-idealized position, like I'm incredible, I'm the best of the... Not from that side, not from an isolated position, separated from your source, but how worthy you are, even not necessarily because of how we choose to think who we are today, because you may not have the most generous idea of yourself today, but who you are in essence, which means who you are in potential. Because remember, we are Tathasta Shakti. We are units of potentiality. There is a potential that has been put into us, being Shakti, being Jiva Shakti, Tathasta Shakti. So real self-esteem implies then to acknowledge which is my nature, which is related to who, what's all that I can be. And that has to do with being Tathasta. And Tathasta is another way of saying vulnerable, because I'm prone to be influenced by the environment and has a potential in one direction or another. I'm vulnerable. I have to expose myself. Nowadays, people sometimes like to speak about being influencers. I'm an influencer. That doesn't go hand by hand with vulnerability. Like, I influence people. But you are influenced to begin with. I mean, you may influence others, but we are pretty much influenced. We are Tathasta. So we are vulnerable. That's the idea. So being vulnerable, again, invites us to recognize the vulnerability that is already there. Again, it's not about being vulnerable, but it's about being vulnerability. You know, I am that. But in a healthy way, acknowledging that in a nurturing environment, of course. We'll be speaking about that, the importance of boundaries and not expressing vulnerability in an abusive environment that can lend itself to exploitation. So in other words, we need to develop a sense of worthiness and self-esteem. Again, not from a self-centered arrogance, but in the context of the gift of our potential, the context of the generosity of our source, who considers it auspicious that we exist. So there's a purpose to that that has to be discovered and fulfilled. So we are vulnerability. We are vulnerable. Again, another example, for example, whether you are aware of either or not, we are infinitesimal, which again is not a bad word. I'm not insulting you. But you are facing the infinite 24/7. Whether you are aware of not, generally we are not. But you are facing the infinite at every moment. Remember, we the other day spoke, even in every atom, there is an embassy of the absolute. Even scientists study the atom and find this is infinite. So every atom contains infinity. What to speak of? I mean, a combination of atoms. And we are infinitesimal in connection to, and surrounded by infinity on every single moment of our lives. So that can be pretty intimidating. But although it can be pretty beautiful if you understand that in a proper way. Wow, I'm embraced by infinity at every step. But yes, in that moment of recognizing our infinitesimalness, we are vulnerable. Because I'm in front of the infinity. This is overwhelming. So I'm in front of the infinite. I'm vulnerable. And that is always. There's not a moment in which I'm not in front of the infinite. And it's okay. That's the point. We should find a way in which acknowledging that is not a problem. We are not afraid of recognizing that reality. What about Shikshastakam's third verse, which is basically Mahaprabhu's most important instruction? Trinada Pisunichi, Natarada Pisunichi, Amani Namana Dinakirtaniya Sadahari. You know this verse. And generally, we quote that, we know it by heart, but we don't like it too much, in one sense. Officially, we like it. Unofficially, in the underground daily issues, I mean, the type of humility, tolerance, respect that he's promoting there, and it's hard pills to swallow. And it's like vulnerability. We will see how this verse speaks a lot about vulnerability, totally speaks about vulnerability. It's another way, again, of speaking about humility, dainya, humility, or vulnerability. That's the path. Now, this verse speaks about being humble and so on, and then nishta, kirtaniya sadahari, constant practice, empowered to be fixed. But first humble, vulnerable, empowered. No? So vulnerability is the way, the path, empowerment is the goal, if you want to put it in other words. Of course, nishta is not the ultimate goal, it's probably the goal for all of us, where we are now, for most of us. So in that sense, that empowerment is the goal, but it comes through vulnerability. Next class, we will be speaking more about that, since we won't be able to finish everything today about vulnerability. We'll require minimum one other class, so we'll continue unfolding the third verse in the context of vulnerability and empowerment. But again, generally, the idea of being vulnerable is not seen as something very positive by many people. I'm much less is related to the idea of empowerment. Everyone is after power, empowerment, but nobody wants vulnerability. So it's like, you want the two or you want none of them, actually. That's how the equation will work. So let's dispel some further myths about what vulnerability is not, so we can learn to properly connect one thing to another, vulnerability with empowerment. In this case, by connecting vulnerability with courage, the virtue of courage, which is very desirable, although for many vulnerabilities not so. But we will see how one is not possible without the other. So let's go to the next section, which we'll be speaking about that. There is no real courage without vulnerability. So as we already said, vulnerability could be defined as uncertainty, risk, emotional exposure. Again, nothing too desirable at first sight for most. But Brené Brown, this specialist that I mentioned, she conducted a very interesting experiment in this connection that will invite us to have a different angle to this issue in connection to the idea of vulnerability, but also with the idea of courage and with the idea of what's desirable and what's undesirable, what we think, at least, it is. So it starts with the premise that we all value courage and deem it as desirable, that's glorified in society and so on, but generally we don't feel the same with vulnerability. So that said, then she mentions that vulnerability is an absolute prerequisite for courage. So then you say, how that it works? So she did a research study asking people, and very courageous people in the, if you will, in the army, going to wars, people who had to express courage constantly, if you will. And she asked that to these people. I'm asking that to you now in our conversation, and I'm asking that to myself as well. So she asked people to think of situations where they had to be courageous, but were not vulnerable. Remember, vulnerability means, can be defined as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. So can you think of any example when you had to be courageous without being uncertain, risky, or exposed emotionally? So interestingly, she did a research with thousands of people and she didn't find one single example that will say, no, I can be courageous independently of being emotionally exposed, uncertain, risky. In other words, her conclusion was, you cannot be courageous without first being vulnerable, without first being in a vulnerable situation. Only then you can be courageous. In other words, if you think you are being brave or courageous, but that bravery or courage does not involve risk and uncertainty, then you are not being courageous. You are cheating yourself. You will like to think you are, but you are not being. So again, this is another symptom of this toxic masculinity, where you pretend you are, but you are not. So again, toxic masculinity likes to consider himself, itself, whatever, courageous, heroic, but at the same time, in its toxic phase, again, it's not willing to expose itself to risk, uncertainty. So it's a fake bravery, if you will, a fake form of courage. So of course, again, I'm saying all this in the bigger picture and context of the topic we are seeing throughout this series. How much are we engaging in this toxic masculinity as members of the Sampradaya? in relation to those things that need to be acknowledged. How much we are risking opening, being courageous enough, emotional exposure, uncertainty, to exhibit this vulnerability, which is the only way to experience real courage. Interestingly, the word courage comes from the Latin cor, which means heart. In Sanskrit, you have also similar, chor, hridai chor. In Spanish, corazón, which means core, heart. So in other words, courageous, to be courageous, has to do with heart. It refers to to telling the story of who you are with your own heart, with your whole heart, with full exposure, if you will. Having the courage of showing who you are at present, of being imperfect, vulnerability. And that will allow for real compassion, for real connection, as a result of such authenticity. And we are all after that, all after connection. We are a tradition of yoga. Yoga means connection, connectivity. But we have to embrace that things, those things that will allow connectivity to happen. So vulnerability, again, will invoke that. So in this way, vulnerability is courage. Courage is not weakness, as some may wrongly interpret it. That's a pin. It's actually vulnerability. It's our greatest measure of courage. There's no possible courage without it. Also, vulnerability is not about winning or losing. It's not concerned with that. That's a dualistic mind, calculating, fearful mind. In the words of Brené Brown, she says very interestingly that vulnerability means having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome. So yeah, I know you are trembling at this particular moment. So fasten your seatbelt, don't leave the class. I'm seeing like 40 people are dropping from the class at this precise moment. So let me repeat it again for those courageous ones. So vulnerability means having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome, which is sometimes the exact opposite of how we move in life. Generally, we show up and are seen when we have complete control, or we think we have complete control over the outcome. And therefore, it's totally coward appearance. There is no courage there because you are not risking anything. So this is a very simple point, but very foundational one. How do you behave when you have no control over the outcome? Are you willing to show up? Or generally you run and hide when everything goes beyond your control. So this idea, or this definition of vulnerability, also is closely related, brings to mind this first three step in Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, which start actually by admitting my powerlessness, our powerlessness regarding whatever addiction we may have, which is vulnerability. It goes out of my control. I cannot control the outcome. I'm weak. I'm frail. But after that, you open yourself and voluntarily put under the shelter of God or the high God force, as they will call it, a greater power, whatever, for spiritual, for empowerment. The so needed transition from personal effort to spiritual receptivity. So I make an effort to open myself, to acknowledge my brokenness, and open myself for spiritual descent, if you will. So those three steps, I mentioned those three steps for those who do not know them. But the first one is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And of course, you apply that beyond alcohol. There are so many addictions we all have in so many ways. So the first one is, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So you just replace the word alcohol with your whatever addiction is there. So we are powerless in connection to our addiction, and I lost control. So admit it. Now that's the first step. Admitting it's out of my control. That's courage. And that's vulnerability. You are showing up and admitting. Admitting means I'm showing up and acknowledging my uncertainty, my risk, my emotional exposure. The second point is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So you are opening the first crack there. You are opening, there is hope. It's not about me. I cannot restore this to sanity. It's totally way out of my control. But I'm opening myself for something else. And then third step, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. So, officially making the decision, taking responsibility for that step, and open yourself for empowerment, basically. But it all began with vulnerability, and it converges into the idea of empowerment. So although we may not be having substance abuse issues in our sampradaya, or at least officially we are not promoting that, they are not part of our principles, although it may happen, but again, there are so many ways of addiction. We may be actually having this, again, addictions in a more subtle level. We may not be drinking alcohol or taking whatever, heroin or whatever, but substance abuse can also be refer here to other types of addictions, addiction to certain patterns of thought, mentalities, as I mentioned already in last class, cognitive rigidity. We could have emotional apathy, institutionalism, elitism, authoritarianism, fundamentalism, and a whole parade of toxic isms, which are way more dangerous than smoking ganja and doing some other things in many cases. So the only way to cure ourselves, to continue with the analogy, from our intoxicated state, following this sequence, is to first acknowledge our powerlessness. That's humility, that's vulnerability. And then open ourselves to God's intervention. So in the same way, we as Sampradaya, we may need to humbly admit how unmanageable some situations, at least in some cases, in some places, some situations have become unmanageable for us. And we have to admit that and pray for Krishna's mercy to descend and empower us. And for Him to decide which changes need to be engineered and how. But even in that case, in case we open our hearts to Krishna to descend, if you will, and create the miracle, we have to be open and willing to accept whatever transformation needs to take place in order for us to survive as a sampradaya, as a group. We have to make our part of not being opposed to that, not creating opposition to that, not attacking the hand that is trying to feed us. So going back to the definition of vulnerability as, again, the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome, being vulnerable also could be then be a synonym for the notion of nakedness. Not necessarily physical, of course, but inner nakedness, with showing who we are, no matter how messy we are. You want to be a messiah, then you have to be able to be messy, to show your messiness, to make a play of words. So inner nakedness is not so much about hiding, again, it's showing how we are, no matter how messy the condition is. Bless this mess, as they used to say here. But also, again, doing so in front of other people, as we mentioned, setting proper boundaries. So vulnerability does not lend to abuse. Because again, vulnerability is an art. I'm not saying it's just pressing a button and it's working. You have to be vulnerable in a proper environment, because if not, that can be, your vulnerability won't be appreciated, maybe exploited, maybe dismissed, attacked, neglected, or abused. So we need to be vulnerable. We are, but we need to acknowledge that. But we also need to not expose ourselves to toxic environments who are not willing to be first empathic with our showing up in the arena, so to say, as we were defining vulnerability, the courage to show up. But if someone is not willing to appreciate that showing up, probably that's not the best place to allow your vulnerability to empower you. To give you an example that I think we shared in some previous class already. But for example, I may be fighting a particular life battle, if you will, in the arena of reality, as we all are. So we may be fighting a particular life battle in the arena, and we are tasting a particular combination of blood, sweat, and tears, and that battle, very specific and unique according to the nature of the battle. So if I'm doing that, and you are not willing to enter the arena I'm fighting in, and through that realize what I'm actually going through in my showing up in that arena, in my fighting in that arena, but if you are not willing to enter there, but instead you choose to criticize myself from your comfort zone in some cozy seat in the stadium, but not entering the arena, then you are not being empathic. And my boundaries, healthy boundaries, will tell me not to pay attention to your words, because they don't come from a place of empathy. They don't come from a place of appreciation of my vulnerability. They don't come from a place of willingness to understand the nature of the battle I'm going through. So in that sense, I'm mentioning we need to set some boundaries, because we cannot just like pay attention to whatever everyone is saying about us, especially nowadays with social media, if that's not coming from a place of empathy, from a place of appreciation to begin with of our showing up in the arena. So it's important to establish healthy boundaries so our vulnerability is actually empowering and not something else, because if we express vulnerability in the wrong way, then we may develop some trauma and say, no, vulnerability is wrong because when I did that, it didn't work. But again, we need to express that in a proper place. So needless to say, of course, going back to the lack of empathy nowadays in some life dynamics about how we think of others, much of today's conversations, quote-unquote conversations, especially in social media, which amplify all the narratives of reality, much of this today's conversations come from this place of non-courage, of cowardice, if you will, of non-willingness to show up, actually, to have a proper conversation directly, to present our thoughts with full vulnerability. But there's basically talking about others instead of talking to others, mostly based on prejudice, accusations, but again, little willingness to enter the arena ourselves and even speak things that may be unsettling. So generally we tend to not have the hard conversations because they make us uncomfortable. But that's something we need to overcome, because to not have hard conversations, the difficult one, the challenging one that we need to have, because they make us uncomfortable, that's the basic definition of privilege. I choose to remain in my comfort zone. But our comfort is not at the center of this discussion. It's not at the center of reality. Our comfort is not what life is about. So we should learn to expose ourselves and talk to people instead, as I said, of only being able to talk about people from somewhere in the stadium, but not inside the arena. That's gossip. So we need to go to those conversations that we are avoiding. We need to be brave enough to talk about the things that we are not having the courage to talk about in a direct way, in a healthy way, affectionate way, but direct way. Brené Brown will say, our duty is to excavate the unsaid. Interestingly. So what is the thing that is not being said? Because we say so many things. Again, social media and all this dynamic, people is behind a screen and keyboard, they feel the courage, quote-unquote, to say so many things, but that's not vulnerability. There's no risk, no uncertainty, no emotional exposure generally there. So it's beyond what we are saying. What's the thing that is not being said, but needs to be said? So that's what requires courage and vulnerability, to expose to that, to show up in that connection. So anyhow, some words regarding vulnerability as courage. And let's conclude, bear with me a few more minutes, if possible, with a few more words in connection to vulnerability, as we already briefly touched upon the notion of nakedness. So let's speak about vulnerability as necessary nakedness. Being seen and being loved by who we are. That's the actual meaning of presenting ourselves naked in vulnerable terms. So real vulnerability, even despite whatever we have shared, maybe real vulnerability may still not be appreciated by others. But we nonetheless need to expose ourselves to vulnerability in one way or another. We need to be naked in front of at least one person we can appreciate. Someone who can appreciate our wounds, someone who can empower us through them. We call them the real sadhus. For example, in Srila Rupa Goswami, 4th verse of Upadipashamrita, is Guhyam Akhyati Prichati. Guhyam Akhyati Prichati. One of the 6 loving exchanges between devotees is to reveal your mind in confidence. That's quite connected with the idea of vulnerability. Srila Siddhar Maharaj will comment on that, saying that if we want to access the heart of the sadhu, first you have to let him or her access your heart. Now, if you want to enter his or her heart, you have to let them enter your heart. Open your heart, not being afraid of showing your fragility or your imperfection or your messiness, and trusting the principle of unconditional love, again with discernment. But that principle is there, so it is to be trusted. So unconditional love means I will be loved no matter what, no matter what messiness accompanies me yet. Recognizing our deep need for help and for becoming filled and fulfilled. So in that sense, again, this revealing the mind is a very crucial exchange of love. Priti Lakshanam, Rupa Goswami says, a synonym of which would be empowerment. Love, interaction, empowerment, but it begins with vulnerability, revealing my mind, opening my heart. So I have to empty myself, in other words, to be filled. To empty myself and accept my vulnerability, and empowering means to be filled, but will come as a result of that. Some people will call that a breakdown. I will call that spiritual awakening. Actually, although for some it may seem like a breakdown. Vulnerability, empty myself, accepting my brokenness, breakdown, brokenness. But properly done, again, it will invoke empowerment and fulfillment, spiritual awakening. Many examples of that, again, the above 12 steps that I mentioned from Alcoholics Anonymous. Recognize the situation has go beyond my control. I need a type of help which is beyond myself. The famous symbolic example of Draupadi, when she's being undressed, if you will, and she's taking her sari with one hand, and with the other hand he's calling for Govinda, but she's still using one hand. She's not using the two hands and fully surrendering. So it is said that in that moment Govinda is not responding, because she still is clinging on her. She's not being fully vulnerable. She's not fully acknowledging the vulnerability of her situation, basically. But when she puts the two hands up, when she is successfully acknowledging vulnerability fully empowered, full empowerment comes, and Krishna provides her, as we know, unlimited unlimited shelter. But as long as she was not empowering herself, as long as she was not emptying herself totally, she was not surrendering totally, she was not being fully vulnerable, so Krishna wasn't able to fully empower her, if you will. So again, it's about emptying ourselves. One example sometimes given regarding emptying ourselves is like the Krishna's flute, the Bamsi. Krishna is called a Bamsi Dhar, Bamsi Vadana, and so on. So the flute is like an empty, a hollow bamboo stick. So Krishna's full breath can pass through his Bamsi without any obstacles at all, because it's empty. So we have to be empty like the Bamsi, so Krishna's full breath, Krishna's will can pass through us. That's what Mahaprabhu wants from his followers. You please become like a Bamsi. So only Krishna's breath, only Krishna's mercy will pass through you. And that means empowerment. Krishna's song, Krishna's breathing. That's empowerment, and the emptying, the vulnerability is nothing in between. So that can really express itself. So another way of, in our tradition, to conceive this nakedness, this idea of emptying ourselves in connection to, again, showing up in the arena, vulnerabilities through the term darshan, which is a word that we use probably on a daily basis, having darshan. But many times, like with most of the terms we use on a daily basis, we may get accustomed to them and we may lose sight of the actual meaning. Darshan doesn't mean seeing. No, like, I will be the seer and something else will be seen by me. Actually, darshan means to present myself in front of God, in Bhagavan, as naked as I can. Remember, we are speaking about nakedness. So it's not about seeing someone else, but how I'm being seen. What I have to do to allow myself to be seen in the proper way. So darshan means I present myself in front of Bhagavan as naked as I can, not attempting to pretend in front of him, not attempting to show false sense of strength and courage, not attempting to show something I'm not, not attempting even to see him, but to be seen by him in all my frailty, in all my nakedness. That's darshan. And to know in those moments that despite all my imperfection and all my flaws, I'm still being loved by Bhagavan unconditionally. That's empowering part, empowering section. But first, vulnerability. First, you have to show up naked and allow yourself to be seen. Show yourself and be seen again. And then empowerment will come. You follow. So in other words, the antidote, if you will, to all our problems is, first of all, to become aware of the tender and redeeming grace of God, who is loving us forever, despite of our brokenness. I will say, because of our brokenness. That's how the principle of causeless grace works. Because of his infinite compassion, our weakness seems to be especially attractive to Bhagavan, especially in his features, Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu. Our brokenness is especially attractive to them, or attractive to be Patita Pavana. They are Patita Pavana, they are the redeemer of the fallen. But they are never called Kapata Pavana. Kapata Pavana means redeemer of the cheaters. No? So if you want to cheat yourself and remain a hypocrite, you cannot be redeemed. But if you want to be honest and sincere and acknowledge all your fallen condition, frailty and brokenness, then you can be redeemed by Patit Pavan. So in this way, we have to acknowledge our brokenness, show up in full nakedness with full courage, and receive the loving glance of Bhagavan, unconditional love. We are being loved despite or because of our brokenness. That's sacred. In this way, darshan could be that sacred exposure. And in that way, due to this sacred exposure, darshan could be termed as ultimate vulnerability and ultimate empowerment. So we can have love in our life if we don't allow ourselves to be seen first. Try to understand this point. We want love. Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about love. But first you have to allow yourself to be seen for who you are today. And you must be vulnerable to be seen. Again, to be seen completely, naked. So vulnerability is a precondition for love, for empowerment. So that's what love is about. And this is what actual darshan is about. Darshan is all about love. Darshan is not so much about, I will see today's outfit of the deities. Oh, how nice the outfits, and you appreciate. I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong, but my point is, do not be reductionistic and just make darshan only that. That's not so courageous. You still are more from an aesthetic appreciation, level of aesthetic skill, which is okay, but that's not darshan 2.0, deep darshan. Deep darshan, again, is to have the courage to show up in the arena and be seen for who you are in full vulnerability and open yourself to be accepted and loved unconditionally despite all your messiness. So anyhow, some words regarding vulnerability in connection to the idea of nakedness, inner nakedness. So let's conclude today's lecture, a few words of conclusion, just to recap what we mentioned and wrapping up here. So in this way, vulnerability is synonymous with the courage that we need to have to be seen, and with the prospect of overarching empowerment. And all this ultimately converges in divine love. We want divine love as a goal, but we need to be aware of those things that are required in between attaining divine love. So without the willingness to be vulnerable, without the willingness to admit our brokenness, as individuals, as a tradition, how can we hope to receive the necessary empowerment to transform whatever needs to be transformed? However, by allowing ourselves to be thoroughly vulnerable, as a tradition, as individuals, of course, Gaudiya Vaishnavism can experience its highest reach and required whatever revival is required in the present moment. And in the context of radical personalism, which is, of course, the bigger picture of this series, we can call this radical vulnerability, one of the different phases of radical personalism. So what does it mean to be a radical personalist? One of its meaning is to be radically vulnerable, as we have described today, because again, that's essential aspect of our own tradition. When we are speaking about Gaudiya Vaishnavism's ultimate potential and empowering in the context of radical vulnerability, let's conclude by remembering the sequence to get there. Now, how to get to that ultimate empowerment that we need as individuals, as a tradition. First, we are tatastha, go to our nature as tatastha, we are potency, tatastha shakti. So we have a potential. So potential has to do with potency. And potency has to do with power and with empowerment. But empowerment has to do, as we explained today, with vulnerability. And vulnerability is synonymous with humility. And humility and vulnerability probably for us represent till now some form of cold turkey yet. It's not very tasty. And ultimately this creates some discomfort. So in other words, probably many of the things that make us uncomfortable today are trying ultimately to empower us. Try to connect it. All I began my whole sequence with the idea of potency and empowerment, and I ended up with some things that we feel as uncomfortable. So let's try to connect the dots and see how many of the things that make us uncomfortable as individual, as a tradition, ultimately try to empower us and to take us to our ultimate potential. In the words of Brené Brown, she will say, she recommends, try to start your day with this affirmation. She says, today I will choose courage over comfort. So it's an interesting idea. No? I will always choose courage, which remember is to say nothing with vulnerability, over comfort, over whatever is, feels comfortable. That's not courageous. That's not real. So I'll conclude here, and in next lecture, next Tuesday, we will speak more about these uncomfortable truths, these unsettling elements, and how we can, again, embrace them properly so they take us to the ultimate empowerment we are all after, as again individuals, as members of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So we'll continue next week. We conclude here today. Regarding some homework for those who would like to join, you can ask to yourself, you can think about that, pray, reflect, or write which type of vulnerability you need to embrace today as an individual in this particular chapter of your life. Of course, there may be more than one, write all the ones that count. But which is that type of vulnerability you need to embrace today to invoke the necessary empowerment that you need to embrace or experience today or tomorrow, let's say. Today you embrace vulnerability, tomorrow comes empowerment, if you will. So for you as an individual, but also we can extend the idea to the Sampradaya in general, which is the type of vulnerability you feel Gaudiya Sampradaya needs to embrace, and what's the necessary empowerment that it needs to experience to overcome whatever obstacles are in the way today. And in this way, That's today's homework. If there are any questions or comments, we can continue throughout the week in the different threads that this talk is being streamed. And next week, as I mentioned, this is a huge topic. It deserves a whole series in itself, but we'll extend at least for one more class the topic of vulnerability and empowerment. I will continue extending the idea of also this idea of inner nakedness and the terror and beauty of inner nakedness, no? Because it's beautiful, but also it's terrifying for some of us. So how can we deal with the beauty of vulnerability, but also why we are afraid of it, despite how beautiful it actually is. And we will also delve into more detail how all this expresses itself in the third verse of Shikshastakam, which is Mahaprabhu's golden rule, main instruction, and so on. So thank you so much for your presence and participation and vulnerability and openness to be properly seen and eventually empowered. Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Shri Gaudiya Sampradaya ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Praman Hari Bol. Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sandubhyayivacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavibhya Namo Namaha Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Hari Bol.